Good morning. My name's Zach, and I've had the privilege of being on staff here for a number of years. My wife, Chelsea, also is on staff here. She works in the kids ministry area. This is a picture of my beautiful family. And when we first got married, When we first got married, a little over a decade ago, we've been married 11 years. I was fresh into ministry. I was in my early 20s, and I was often put in positions where I'd have to preach or teach or give relational advice. But as somebody who's newly married, I didn't quite feel like I had the street cred yet to be able to speak with much authority on such things. I'm happy to say now, after being married over a decade, I have a little bit of credibility. There are some things that I have learned, and husbands can back me up on this. One of the things that I have learned is that not every thought that enters your brain needs to come out your mouth. And I learned this lesson particularly hard a number of times. One of them was about 7 years ago. My oldest here, his name is Zeke. He was born 7 years ago this month, which means about 7 years ago was her first time, you know, being pregnant. And you know, women's bodies change when they're pregnant, and they emotions and hormones and stuff, like, I don't understand it all, but I know that their bodies hurt more. And so I would be giving back massages and you know, trying to rub her back and, like, relax those muscles and be a good husband, you know. And so I remember after she had Zeke, it was a few days home from the hospital, and I was, you know, rubbing her back again and trying to get her to relax. You know, having a baby is stressful. You don't have a whole lot of sleep, which probably explains my lack of filter for what happened next. But as I'm rubbing her back, I was like, man, you know, the miracle of childbirth, it's incredible. Just a few days ago, that baby was inside of you, right? And now, like, I can just tell a difference in your skin. You've had a baby, it's got more elasticity to it, it's a little squishy. And I realized as soon as that came out, how that sounded. And I immediately tried to pull those words back in, but it was too late. And she slaps my hands away, looks at me, and goes, "What did you just say?" I said, "Wait, let me explain." And I meant, that's not how I meant it. That sounded way worse. I just meant, it's incredible what your body has just gone through. Oh my gosh. And I've learned a time or two since then this valuable lesson. Intent is usually irrelevant. Can I get an amen? I can't tell you how many times I've had the foot and mouth syndrome, where I have said something because, not because I had any positive or negative connotations to it, but simply because I had that thought. But that thought should have stayed in here and not exited my mouth hole and said something that I regretted. Fortunately, I did ask permission to share that. She said yes, because it'll make you look like an idiot. And I said, okay. So we've since been able to laugh about it. It's been a learning experience. Like I said, I've learned a thing or two in the last decade. Things not to do more than things to do. But words have a lasting impact, right? We all know this. Words have a way of shaping us for better or for worse. We can all recall something that someone has said to us who has influence in our lives, said something that either really impacted us in a positive way and encouraged us forward, or said something that was detrimental to our mental health and we still play on repeat in our minds when we have times of self-doubt, right? Words are powerful. I know you're at church, but if you're not used to church things, or you don't even agree with half the stuff we talk about here on a regular basis, even you can concur that there is some weight to our words. They mean something. They are impactful. They are powerful, and we best be careful in how we use them. Because if we don't show intention with how they come out, then odds are we'll regret it. Intent is usually irrelevant. Last couple weeks, we've been talking about this idea of the weight of our words. Josh opened us up a couple weeks ago and talked about how not all words are equally weighted. Namely, negative words weigh more than positive words. They weigh way more than positive words. And you remember them more. Last week, Danny talked about how the source determines the weight. Whoever says it, it will change how it impacts you, right? The source determines the weight determines the impact, and the impact determines the outcome. Right? And this week, I really want to teach you some lessons that I have learned and tried to learn, which is that intent is usually irrelevant. Right? We've all been there. We've said something that we meant one way, but other people heard something we didn't say. It fell on their ears differently than what it sounded like in our minds. And we've had to pedal back a little bit, try to explain ourselves, try to repair maybe some broken trust or hurt feelings after what was in there came out, and it came out in a way you did not intend for it to, right? Intent does not erase hurtful words or undo damage, because words have tremendous power, regardless of intent. And this is important. I want you guys to catch this. Assuming, right, that intent matters more than the words themselves reflects an ignorance of the power of words. And I speak to you as somebody who is still learning this to this day. I'm going to reiterate this through the whole message because this is something that is difficult for everybody, right? Words, I always want people to assume my intent more than the words that I actually say. But assuming for other people that our intent matters more than the words themselves, we've got something backwards. It reflects an ignorance of the power of words. We all would like to assume that the people around us give us the benefit of the doubt. But you know, on the other end, it's much more difficult to give the benefit of the doubt to other people when they say something hurtful to you because you're hurt. And so assuming intent matters more than the words themselves is a big mistake. I think it actually keeps us from being more intentional about the words we say because we just assume, oh, well, they know our heart. They know my heart. Maybe, but that doesn't mean that the big obstacle you just put there doesn't exist, right? It makes it harder for people to get to the heart. So words have so much power. This is why this verse actually terrifies me more and more the older I get. From James chapter 3, verse 1, it says, "Not many of you should become teachers because those of us who teach will be judged more strictly," right? That's terrifying to me, if I'm being honest. As somebody who teaches very often, that terrifies me. And I'll tell you something, when I was new into ministry, and when I was newly excited about, like, you know, I get to use all this Bible college training that I just got. I just studied the word, you know, to quote Nacho Libre, "People don't think I know a buttload of crap about the gospel, but I do," right? It's, if you've seen it, you know. But I was that guy, and I was like, yes, give me the mic. I'll say something. I got a word. And the older I get, the more I'm like, shoot. Tomorrow, I may regret the things I say today because I either said them wrong or I was completely wrong in what I said. And that terrifies me because the things that teachers say often become the mantras for the people who hear them. And I don't want to be responsible for misguiding somebody. I would like to think that you understand my intent is to help you walk closer to Jesus. But if I say something wrong or inaccurate or if I misguide you, then my intent doesn't really matter if I steered you in the wrong direction. So this terrifies me, but this is a concept that doesn't just apply to those of us who teach. James goes on in the next verse, and it applies to all of us. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check. Now, what he's saying basically is that where the tongue goes, everything else follows. Right? The tongue is so difficult to control. It's the hardest thing to have self-control over. But if you can have self-control over your body or over your tongue, then pretty much everything else that comes from you is going to be just fine because that takes the most self-discipline. That takes the most effort to tame the tongue. It's difficult. It's difficult, right? I try to come up with a clever way to get you to remember this. After words, actions follow afterwards. Or try this one. Actions follow after words. Afterwards. Or maybe this one's better. Afterwards, actions follow. I couldn't decide which one worked best, so I just threw them all up there. It's a play on words. Do you get it? Because afterwards, and it's spelled like afterward. Anyway. So afterwards, actions follow. Where the tongue goes, then everything else follows. We know this to be true because common sense, but actually living it out, not so common sense. It's difficult, right? This is how powerful our words are. There's a term called neuroplasticity, which is just a really fancy way of talking about how the brain is able to, like, change, grow, and adapt in circumstances, create new neural pathways, and learn, recover, experience the world in different ways. It's basically how the brain develops and grows and learns different ways of thinking, right? Neuroplasticity. And words have a profound impact on the brain's ability to be able to learn, grow, adapt, rediscover, retrain. Words have a profound impact on this. There's the impact of social interactions and words on this thing called neuroplasticity, right? Regular positive reinforcements, which includes the words spoken to us by other people, have been shown to boost the brain's ability to learn and to cognitively develop and be flexible, to think outside the box, right? The role our words play not only shape how other people think, but also has to do a lot with our own cognitive health, right? And there's been tons of studies on this. You can go Google them, look them up later. Vanderbilt has done a few of them. So has UCLA. You can find a lot of these studies. But the idea of like self-talk and positive affirmations, well, I'll admit to me sounds a little fluffy, but the reality is that has a profound impact on the brain, and you can't deny it, right? Positive self-talk and affirmations, they rewire your brain, because when you talk and when you think positively and say these things out loud, it's been shown to actually create new neural pathways and increase mental health, resilience, all this kind of stuff. It's kind of crazy the way that the brain works in this way. Engaging in intentional language use, such as positive affirmations, it increases cognitive flexibility, which refers to the brain's ability to adapt to new situations, think in new ways, think outside the box. And it's critical for emotional regulation and resistance. Wild. Just positive affirmations. It's not a magic trick that just happens overnight, but it does seem to show that there's a key role that can have. There's also something called the illusory truth effect. And this is the idea that that repetition, especially in phrases or things that are said out loud, can make people more likely to believe in those statements, right? Even when they're false, hence the illusory truth effect, right? The more you hear something repeated, the more you hear it from other people, the more likely you are to believe it, right? That applies in a whole variety of situations. Think about the things that bullies said to you on the playground growing up. May not have been true, but it had an effect on the way that you think, and you believed those things. Even if you deep down know it's not true, your brain wants to believe it because it heard it repeated so often. Think about political messaging. Just because you hear something a lot doesn't necessarily mean it's true. The illusory truth effect. There's a lot of marketing campaigns out there to convince you to sell products based off this principle right here. It could be things that are true. It could not be. But the reality is, when our brains hear things on repeat, we're more likely to believe in it as true despite a lack of prior knowledge. There's also something called verbal affirmations and emotional connection. Research has shown that verbalizing affirmations and self-talk increase emotional connection and conviction. Basically, what this means is that when you verbalize something out loud, your brain is more likely to hear your own voice and affirm it as true, cementing that belief as reality in your mind. The more you repeat stuff, the more you verbalize something out loud, the more it almost tricks your brain into believing that it's true. Again, regardless of whether or not it's actually true. This is the power of words. It's kind of incredible when you kind of look into these things. And as somebody who teaches regularly, who's had to do you do research and you study something and you look up parts of the Bible and you understand historical context, and if I know that I've got to relay that information to people, and then I repeat it like 3 times in a day, I walk away and I'm like, man, I know that way better than I did last week, right? It cements it in my brain more. Why? Because my brain heard my voice saying it repeatedly out loud, which is kind of scary. If I'm saying something really wrong, then I've got to unwind that later. But the reality is, there's a connection to the words we say out loud and the way our brains develop and create neural pathways with that, right? Verbalization and brain function. This is another UCLA study. It demonstrates that putting thoughts and feelings into words affects brain activity. right? Verbalizing emotions in particular reduces the brain's emotional response and engages areas like the prefrontal cortex, which has to do with critical thinking and logical thinking. It helps in processing and regulating your thoughts. And check this out, it may help individuals more deeply internalize ideas that they speak out loud. Again, it's just another study that reinforces this idea that verbalization adds to belief reinforcement, right? It's kind of wild the way our brains are wired. I think this is done intentionally. I think God did this for a reason, right? Basically, after the tongue, everything follows. I love it when modern science seems to prove what the Bible talked about thousands of years ago, right? Where the tongue goes, what comes out of the mouth, generally determines the direction moving forward. What you say directly impacts your thinking. I mean, just think in like Christian or church world. This is why we do a lot of things, right? In the student ministry area, we generate discussion questions for small groups that are designed specifically to get students to verbalize what they just heard about in a message. Why? One, to see if they were listening, but two, because if they verbalize it, no matter how simple it is, they're more likely to engage with it and believe it. So verbalizing impacts the way we do a lot of things, even in church world. It's why we have confession at baptism. Not the main reason, but it's a reason, right? When you confess something, I believe Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God, you're more likely to believe it because you just said it out loud, right? There's a phrase we say all the time when it comes to worship. We believe that the songs that we sing affect the lives that we live. All three of you, great. I'm glad you remember it. The songs we sing affect the lives that we live. We believe that because I think that's a part of why God instructs us to worship, right? There's out of all the layers and complexity that is involved in going into what happens in our hearts and what happens when we choose to worship, there's something to be said about the idea that when we verbalize out loud, especially put to music, we are more likely to believe that he has good plans for our lives, even on bad days, if we are singing it out loud, especially with other people. There's many layers that compound this effect, right? When we don't know the direction of our lives moving forward, but we just sang about how God has good plans and his promises are good, we're more likely to believe it and feel more at peace and uplifted despite our circumstances not having changed. When we verbalize out loud through song that I am who you say I am, despite all the negative baggage and words that are repeated in my mind from childhood that somebody said that hurt, whenever I have self-doubt and think I'm not worthy of anything, but then we sing about how Jesus gave his life for us as we were still sinners. And I am who he says I am. I'm a child of God. When we sing that and verbalize it out loud, we are more likely to believe it and be grounded in our faith. These things bolster up our faith. I think this is also why this idea of verbalization, it's why it's used, like words are used to control people all throughout history, back in ancient times too. That's why kings required their people to recite the creeds, to worship, to even refer to the kings and to royalty as deity, as a god, right? Because if you can get people to say this repeatedly often enough, it bolsters your own image and gives you more power to subdue the people. I think this is why, personal opinion, why in Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, when Nebuchadnezzar built the idol, they could have reasonably just gone along with it, worshiped the idol of Nebuchadnezzar, right? Worshiped it and said the things so that they could live to fight another day, so they didn't get thrown in the furnace and they could continue to do God's good work. But they held by their convictions. They did not repeat that because even though they could have had all the intent in the world, that I don't believe what I'm saying. The more you say it, the more likely you are to just let it go and just to act as if that's true. Words have power over our lives. This is also why gossip is so bad. Amongst other reasons, you're actually teaching your brain things that just are not true, because gossip, it reinforces beliefs that are at best just not helpful and at worst, not true. When we don't go to the person we take issue with, but talk about them behind our back, we're reinforcing beliefs about them that may or may not be true based on a narrative that we've constructed based off of experiences that we've had. And then we can affirm those biases by talking with other people about them, but not talking to the source and to the person. This has weighty effects in our lives. Words are powerful, right? So James says that the tongue keeps the whole body in check. It has the power to lead the way for your life in a lot of ways, right? But as much as it has the power to impact your life, and as we've talked about, it can change your brain, it can shape your thinking, and it has a lot to do with your life, there's a whole other side to this. It holds great power to impact the lives of everybody else around you. To quote the great wisdom of Uncle Ben, with great power comes great responsibility. And we have to recognize that the power our words have to affect the lives of those around us, not just ourselves, but as Christ followers, this should be our highest priorities, how our words influence those around us, how they impact those we love, how they impact those we don't love. And you know this, especially if you don't follow Jesus or you don't believe in Christianity or anything like that, I would be willing to wager that one of the reasons is because you've seen Christians who confess Jesus who have nothing to do with him in the way that they speak or talk about other people. And you see the hypocrisy of the tongue and you go, don't want anything to do with that. As Christians, our words are even weightier. There is so much more at stake. So many more eternal ramifications for not keeping our tongues in check, because words are powerful. So James goes on to illustrate this idea, the dangers of the tongue, using three metaphors. He says, one, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Now, I don't know a whole lot about horses, but I did a little bit of research in preparing for today's message. This is kind of wild. Clydesdale, or a well-conditioned draft horse can pull a load of around 8,000 pounds. It's kind of wild, if you think about it. For a lighter work, a horse can typically pull about 1.5 times its body weight for longer durations. Horses can comfortably carry about 20% of their body weight on their backs, which is helpful for when people need to ride a horse or carry lots of luggage on them. Horses are built of muscle and are strong and are fast and can go up to 44 miles in short stints. And the term horsepower was coined to represent the amount of work a horse could do. Horses are powerful and they can be tamed and controlled with one tiny little bit in their mouths. And that's how powerful the tongue is. With all the strength, with all the power, with all the giftings that you might have, that could be turned in any direction by the use of your tongue. It's a lot. He continues on, or take ships as an example. Although they are large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Now, our family went on vacation last month. We went on a cruise. It's first time taking the boys flying in the plane and all that stuff. It was a great experience. We did deep dives into like how cruises are built and how they run. There's lots of documentaries on YouTube. It's really fun, but it has nothing to do with this. But imagine ships back in the day as well, right? We're not as big as our cruise lines today, but even little boats, the amount of the boat or the ship, just look at the mass and all the pieces that go to it. All guided by just a tiny little rudder can shift the direction of the entire thing. It's pretty incredible. He goes on, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by just a small spark, right? The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. In other words, your words have the power to cause mass destruction in relationships and in the lives of those around you, because just one little spark can set the whole thing ablaze. And you know this because you've been hurt or wounded or had your trust broken by somebody that you admired and looked up to that said one thing that completely changed how you view them and completely changed how you feel they see you. Because regardless of intent, they had a thought, they said it, and it came out. And now you don't know what to do with that. Just a small spark, just one word, can ruin relationships. The words that we use have tremendous power. Of all the parts of our body, of all of the areas in life that we could have discipline and self-control, the tongue is the hardest to tame, which is why mastery over speech is so critical, and it's a sign of spiritual maturity. I mean, you just think about it. Think about the people, if you're a Christian, think about a Christian older than you that you look up to, that you admire, that you enjoy being around. You probably would be hard-pressed to think of a time that their words were used to either tear down somebody else who wasn't there or to make you feel less than. You usually walk away from people of spiritual maturity feeling like a burden lifted, feeling like I want to be around them more. I feel more at peace because of their presence or what they say, because their words hit differently. It's a sign of spiritual maturity. And this is good news, because for those of us who taming the tongue does not come natural, there's hope for us yet. It can be a learned skill. We can create new neural pathways. We can put our faith in God to guide us and have his spirit help us to lean into him and not say everything that comes into our brains, right? And better than just not saying negative things, we can learn to say the positive things that are critical to say in the right moments, even when it's scary. Right? Spiritual maturity is essential for Christians. Knowing when to speak, knowing when not to speak. And when you have hurt somebody with your words, like we all do, intent does not undo the damage or the harm done. So I learned a valuable lesson from my story earlier, and I've learned it many times since then as well. There's a difference between explaining and apologizing, right? Explaining often makes things worse. Men, can I get an amen? Explaining makes it, oh, that's not what I meant. No. You got to understand. I meant, like, it's incredible the way God designed your body to work and how, you know, didn't make it any better. In fact, the more I talked, it was more like, just digging my own grave, right? Just stop, right? Like, married folks, if your wife's ever said, just stop. Those two words, I have learned to heed those words most of the time. Because explaining does not logically explain away why they shouldn't be hurt anymore, because that's not what you meant. No, explaining doesn't take away the hurt or undo the damage that was just caused. Right? Imagine when the stakes are much higher. Right? Explaining doesn't help. Instead, the next words out of your mouth should be, I'm so sorry, and then nothing else. Just zip it. Allow them to feel what they're going to feel and be willing to try to make repairs. But when we try to explain ourselves, what we're doing is we're making a conversation about us. We're elevating our own perspective over empathy and over what the person has to now process because of what you said. And they need to do that without you interjecting, right? Explanations elevate the speaker, while being humble, having humility, and being sensitive elevates the person who heard, right? That's incredibly simple to understand, but incredibly difficult to live out, right? The tongue is the door to hypocrisy. James continues on in the next few verses. He says, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come both praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree produce olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. You know what he's saying by this, right? The tongue has the keen ability to expose your hypocrisy better than anything else. That's hard to live by. And this is a special message, again, for those of us in the room who follow Jesus, who want to represent him well, because our witness and the eternity of those around us depends on it. Our words have weight, and they are powerful. So, signs you may be a fig tree trying to produce olives, aka signs that you might be a hypocrite in the way that you're using your tongue. This is not an exhaustive list. These are the things, again, that come from the perspective of somebody who struggles with this. So these are the things I think of. You can add to this list all you want. I'm sure there's a note section in the app. You can add all of the things that you want to work on. But here's some of the things that I thought of, right? If you assume your intentions speak louder than your literal words themselves, you may be a fig tree trying to produce olives, right? If you notice things about your spouse or your children or your people close to you that you care about but you don't say them. For whatever reason, maybe you're an introvert and you just internalize things, you don't say it out loud very often, whatever reason. When you see something good, but you don't say it and call it out, man, you're missing opportunities. Or conversely, if you notice things that need to be addressed in your relationships, but you shy away from those conversations because they require confrontation or a potentially uncomfortable conversation, you may need to check the hypocrisy. If you build yourself or your image at the expense of others, if you glory in somebody else's shortcomings because it makes you look better and you're happy to talk about it, you might be trying to produce olives as a fig tree, right? If you sing the fight song at the game with all enthusiasm but can barely muster up the energy to mouth along during worship, if your speech is no different than the people that you're around every other day at work who do not follow Jesus, if people can look at your life and find no distinguishing features between the way that you speak and the way other people who don't follow Jesus speak, there might be a problem. If you type or text things on a screen that you would never say out loud to a person, might be a fig tree trying to produce olives. If you compliment someone to their face but criticize them behind their back, there could be a problem. If you claim, and this is a tough one, if you claim faith in God's provision for your life but you complain about your circumstances, you might want to check that. Again, I'm sure you can think of many other things. The ways our tongue has a lot of ways that you can produce all kinds of hypocrisy in different ways. And if you can't think of any more, ask the person next to you, right? I'm kind of kidding, but I mean, that's what small groups for, right? The tongue is a reflection of the heart. Out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so, at the same time, though, our words can influence our heart and our thinking, as we've discussed earlier. So it can be really easy to get in this echo chamber of ourselves, especially if you're an introvert and you internalize things, or you argue with yourself and have fake conversations while you're in the shower or trying to go to bed at night, things you should have said or things you'll definitely say next time. Am I the only one that does that? Or I hope not, by the laughter, right? I think this is a normal human thing. If we do that, what we're doing is we're feeding our own echo chamber, and we need somebody to come in and break the loop. Somebody who in our lives we give the permission to humbly approach us and say, hey, you gotta change your thinking there. You're constructing a narrative that is not based in reality. And that's a tough conversation to have. But I don't wanna cause tension. I don't wanna cause conflict. I don't wanna make it a thing. Well, if you're too afraid to do that, then you potentially doom the person to continue that mistake and ground that thinking even further. So it's tough. I'm not saying it's easy, but this is why humility is so important, and this is why community is so important. We have to have people in our lives who can call us out, who can lovingly redirect us when we start thinking in the wrong way. Right? The potential for sin and destruction with our speech is equally matched by the potential for great good. I want you to think about what regrets you potentially will have in your life by not using your words to restore a relationship. Maybe something was said to you, or you said something to someone else that you love, and it's caused a great fire between you and them, and you know there's something you have to say, but you're scared of the conversation. What regrets will you have at the end of your life if you don't go and restore the relationship? If you swallow your pride long enough to say, hey, I'm sorry for my role. I want what's best for you. How can I make it right? When it comes to the power of your words, intent is usually irrelevant. So how are your words a conducive construction site to build other people up rather than tear them down? How can you use your words to influence the advancement of God's kingdom in your life and in the lives around you? One quick story to wrap up. There was a guy named Mordecai Ham, who used to go around. He was a preacher, would travel around and would preach revivals and all this kind of stuff. In about 1934, There's a young teenager in his audience who heard him and was convicted of his sin, gave his life to Jesus, and in follow-up conversations, Mordecai Ham encouraged him and inspired his life to be on mission. And so this teenager starts studying to go into the ministry and to become a preacher himself. And because of that encounter, because of that conversation that deeply impacted his life, this person went on to become a global evangelist, reaching millions of people across 185 countries with his messages about the love of Christ. His words and ministry have shaped the Christian faith for generations at this point, and influenced countless leaders, including presidents, and sparked movements that continue to this day. And that person was none other than Billy Graham. You have no idea the impact that your words or a conversation could have on somebody else's life and the ripple effect that that could cause for generations. Our words have such power to them. And with that great power comes great responsibility and obligation, especially for those of us who follow Jesus, to live a life that honors and reflects Jesus in everything that we do and say. Your words are powerful, and they have a lasting impact in our short time on this earth. So as you guys head out this week, I want you to think about this question with a little intention. What could your words do to shape eternity for those around you? Let me pray. God, you are good, and we love you, and we thank you for the opportunity to study your word, that we have these words from James that have been passed down for generations, for thousands of years, to continue to impact us today. I ask for your spirit to guide us. If there's somebody in this room that needs to go and make amends with somebody or restore a relationship, I ask that you would convict them and you would give them the strength and the wisdom to have the conversations necessary. If there's somebody in this room who needs encouragement, who is feeling like they've reached the end of the road and they need somebody to affirm what you think of them, that they are worth it, that life is not over, that there are still chances and beautiful roads ahead, I ask that you would give that person boldness to go and speak to them. I ask that you would give those people in need of encouragement, that you would put people in their path that would say those things, to be your words and your hands and feet to them as they communicate the love that you have. Help us to speak with intention in everything that we do, to tame our tongues, not only for our own sake, but for the sake of those around us. We thank you for your example that you set by coming into this world all those years ago and leading the way and showing us your love. Help us as we each day strive to follow more closely in your footsteps. It's in Jesus' name.